If you have a brain, you have bias. So let's just own it. Some biases help us by simplifying our decision-making process. Other biases hold us back by impacting who gets hired and promoted, and even who we approach to be our friends. Welcome to Breaking the Bias, a podcast where we interview impact makers who are breaking the bias when it comes to inclusion and equity, because sharing our stories is how real belonging happens.
Networking is when you walk in a room and think about, what am I going to gain? What am I going to walk away with? How is this person helping me? Connecting is walking into a room and thinking about, here's my superpowers. What can I be doing in this room to help these people? See the difference?
I'm Holly Corbett, VP of Content for Consciously Unbiased. As we kick off 2023, many of us may be reflecting on the past year and thinking ahead about how we want to show up and who we want to connect with in the new year. The research shows that loneliness increased for Americans during the pandemic. At the same time, social media use increased. I spoke to Susan McPherson, author of The Lost Art of Connecting, to find out how we can use technology for good to reverse the growing trend of disconnection. We also discussed how to build more meaningful relationships and authentically diversify our networks and overcome similarity bias. Relationship building takes time, but Susan shares practical advice for how we can focus on making connections and expand our networks without feeling overwhelmed. Now, on to our conversation. Susan, what inspired you to write The Lost Art of Connecting, and why do you think connecting is such a lost art?
Over the years, I started to think and see that connecting became a transaction. And for years, I have seen the difference or felt the difference between networking and connecting. And there's a reason I didn't name the book The Lost Art of Networking. Even during the pandemic, we continued networking. We would find people on LinkedIn, do the, you know, connecting of the names, and then ask somebody or tell somebody what we needed. We would meet people in Zoom chats. We would basically continue networking, which I find very transactional. But what was lost, and what I believe has been lost over the years with the ease of technology, is this loss of intentionality, loss of taking the time to really get to know people in a way that continues over the long haul. Okay. So I think one of the key differentiators between networking and connecting is leading with how you can be helpful to others. Networking is when you walk in a room and think about, what am I going to gain? What am I going to walk away with? How is this person helping me? Connecting is walking into a room and thinking about, here's my superpowers. What can I be doing in this room to help these people? See the difference? And in the aughts, when social media became so prolific and it became super easy to just zap out a DM on various platforms, we stopped really thinking about what the ramifications are for that. And a friend of mine said to me that when she brought her son and daughter to the school bus stop in the morning, I think they were 14 and 16. They were probably younger, 8 and 10. She'd hug them goodbye. They'd get up on the school bus. And as soon as they took their respective seats, their heads would bop down to look at their handheld devices. The scary thing is every other child on that school bus did the same thing. Now, my school bus memories are not incredibly lovely or, you know, heartwarming. However, I talked to my fellow classmates. So this started to get the wheels turning, and I wanted us to get back to a time when we were more intentional, when we reached out to people, when we connected people, back to the days of what my parents did with the telephone and the typewriter. So a very long-winded answer to a very simple question.
Yeah, I love that. And you basically summed it up. Networking feels more transactional. Connection is more of a two-way street and what you can do for other people. And it also strikes me as, and not to make generalizations, but networking sounds more masculine to me, and connecting sounds more feminine because I don't know, some of the research shows, I think, that men are more likely to ask or feel more comfortable asking for things.
Oh, absolutely.
Women, especially under stress, have the tend to be befriend response, where they look to actively connect. So I thought that was interesting. But I mean, what does a meaningful connection look like to you?
Sure. That's a great question. Well, I founded my company at age 48. Okay. I never in my wildest dreams thought I would be an entrepreneur, you know, in my 20s and my 30s and my 40s. Over the last 10 years, 90% of our business has been inbound. So what that told me is those meetings I took in my 20s, those people I made introductions to in my 30s, in my 40s, when I had the privilege and the means to be able to write a check to support, those people have come back. They might not be direct clients, but they have referred business. So I look back and I think, thank my lucky stars that I said yes to those meetings. Now, for the person listening who's thinking, oh my God, do I have to say yes to every one of those pick your brains? That's not what I'm suggesting, because this is over the long haul. But it's showing up for people. It's when you meet people, you actually listen and ask them about what are their hopes and dreams. And you do maybe just a little bit to help them get there. Okay. That to me is connecting. And maybe it is from a soft feminine side of things, but I think men can be good connectors as well. But it's that reciprocity. It's staying in touch. It's being there over the long haul and leading with how you can be helpful to others.
Mm. So meaningful connection is really, it sounds like seeing the other person, trying to get to know the other person, asking how you can be of service. So I think many of us, though, may stick to small talk because maybe we're afraid of being vulnerable. So how do you have any tips on like how to start a meaningful conversation? Like, is it a phase? Obviously, you know, when you don't know somebody, how do you create that connection?
Well, if you do read the book, there is a chapter that gives you 11 questions to have in your back pocket. if we want to get to fast tactics. But I typically find, and this is a generalization, of course, that make it about the other person. People inherently, most people, unless they are painfully shy or very introverted, don't like to talk about themselves. But I also feel that if you're not prepared to open up about yourself, you can't expect others. Okay. And I think it's totally fair to be asking people like, what's the best thing that happened to you this week? Or what is the best podcast you've heard in the next month? And oh, by the way, this is one I love, right? What is most important is to not talk about the weather. Okay. I mean, when I ask people, like when you know, for years before Zoom, before the pandemic, when we'd be on conference calls and you'd be waiting for everybody to come or the host, 9 times out of 10, people would talk about the weather, right? You know why? Because it's safe. It's easy. You're not sharing anything that could be potentially a descriptive of who you are, but you get nowhere. You learn nothing. And it's not like tomorrow, if you follow up with somebody, be like, yes, it was great talking about the weather in Cleveland yesterday, right? I mean, but instead, if you can be asking people about, you know, a cause they're passionate about, or if you could solve any problem in the world and finances weren't an issue, what would it be? And when somebody tells you that, guess what? You can take that information. And the next day or the next week when you follow up, you can say, Holly, I understand you are really passionate about reproductive rights. Well, I happen to be involved with Don't Ban Equality, and I'd love to see how you could get involved.
Yeah, I love that. So the weather thing resonates with me so much because you're exactly right. Whenever we're waiting on conference lines or waiting for people to join Zoom calls, that's where people naturally gravitate. And can you give some other examples of, you know, like the other question is, what are you doing this weekend? Or those types of questions. Yeah. Are there starter questions for people that you don't know that we could pull from the book to really ask something more meaningful?
Well, I know, you know, it's somewhat in the news right now, is not a question to ask, but I have always loved to ask people where are they from? What is their heritage? Mm-hmm. And I bring that from a place of heart because I find it helps me learn about places perhaps I've never been or cultures I don't understand. But I also understand there's sensitivities there, right? So I think you know, certainly that is a question, you know, to be careful with, but it is a wonderful question if you ask it from a heartfelt human place, because I find we learn so much more from others that then help us learn and become more, you know, just culturally aware and just better in all that we do. I do very much love to ask the question, if you could go anywhere in the world tomorrow, where would it be? Because again, you will learn about people's passions. You might find that they're into culture versus, you know, somebody who says they want to go sit on a beach, right? I mean, these are silly, goofy questions that aren't so personal that you are going to, you know, dig where you shouldn't dig. Another question that I love in a kind of a fun setting is, what was your favorite food as a child? Okay. Yeah. So you can see I'm definitely hearkening back to the human side of things rather than what do you do for work? But when it comes to, you know, more professional questions, if you're at a professional question is, you know, if you could be anywhere but this event, where would you be and why? Right. Because again, it gets them out of that kind of anxiety ridden, because typically when we're at events, and certainly after 2 years of isolation, we're out of practice. And I'm a social, very much of an extrovert, and I am finding myself uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's very true. A lot of people may feel a little rusty on their social skills because we haven't put them into practice. I mean, just to go back to like your beginnings, you know, what ways has your upbringing maybe shaped how much importance you place on connecting?
Yeah, it's really funny because my parents literally were serial connectors. Every morning at the breakfast table in the 70s in upstate New York, which I understand is not far from where you grew up, maybe a few years later, my parents would have the 5 local newspapers splayed out, plus yesterday or the day before's New York Times and Wall Street Journal. Not Wall Street Journal. No, they weren't in finance. What am I saying? The Boston Globe, because most of my family is from the Boston area. Yeah, no. My father was a history professor. He would not be reading the Wall Street Journal. At least that. Maybe not, if he was around. But they would be clipping and cutting every time they saw an article that made them think of someone. Then they would go to their respective manual typewriters and type short little missives, put those notes in envelopes and off into the postal mail. And this was every single day. And Holly, I swear to you, I thought everybody's parents did this. Okay. And of course, in the 90s, when I was coming of age professionally and the internet happened, I could take what they did and be so much more efficient because I could put 10 friends or colleagues or people I wanted to meet on the same email chain and send them an article and say, thinking of you. Okay. And therefore, I was connecting all those people. And then in the aughts, when social media happened, I took it to the next level. And instead of getting on Twitter in 2007 and being like, here's what I eat for breakfast, I was like, Dave, you need to meet Sloan and you need to meet Holly. And I would use the means to connect. But seeing my parents do this day after day and you know, using the telephone. And then I think to myself, if they had the technology we had today, oh my goodness. So it was very much rooted into me as a young child. And then in 2007, I went away with like 6 or 7 of my closest girlfriends. And our goal that weekend, we went up to the Catskills, and our goal that weekend was to create our elevator speeches. Which were very important, like when social media was really taking off, so that you could succinctly articulate who you were. And it was that weekend, by the third day, I found the guts to say, hi, I'm Susan McPherson, and I'm a serial connector. And of course, I thought I was going to pee in my pants because it sounded so ridiculous. But then 16 years later, I wrote a book on it. So that's the story of how the whole kind of connection thing happened.
Amazing. And so can you give some examples of, you know, the benefits that you've personally received from cultivating all these connections throughout your life and throughout your career?
Oh, my gosh. Well, because first of all and foremost, and this is something really important, and I'd love all your listeners to think about, every good thing that has ever happened to me and to almost everyone I know happened because of connections and introductions, right? So I want us to take it more seriously than think it's just for fun or just for, you know, social status or more likes on a particular click. It's actually real life happenings. But I have to credit what's happened in my company, the clients, the work we've been able to do, which is all around impact. That all came from various people that I met, the boards I've been able to sit on and serve on around. And things from refugee issues to better journalism through the 19th, these are all through connections. You know, my work with supporting women-led founders, I mean, to me, that is such a privilege. Well, guess what? It was through connections that I met people, how I met you through a wonderful community called the WeSuite, right? And we can be part of these various communities, but if we sit back and just wait, you know, they won't come sometimes. So, but I think if anything, it is literally all the good things. And, you know, I'll also just share another lesson learned that I think is important on this journey. And that is getting rid of our preconceived notions. It's something that I think early in my career, and probably even mid-career, I would restrict my kind of reaching out to people who I thought could help, right? You know, who might be able to get me that promotion or that raise or that board opportunity or that nonprofit opportunity. And instead of thinking about what we don't know is what we don't know, and everyone we meet is an opportunity to learn, you know, really lead with curiosity. And one thing my dad really and my mom embraced in me was this notion that every single person we meet on this planet, no matter whether they have the highest job at IBM or they, you know, happen to provide amazing food at a restaurant you go to, they are deserved of our kindness, our compassion, our curiosity, and our care. And that has been a real grounding for me. And in 2017, out of nowhere, I got an email from a friend asking if I would introduce her friend, who was a filmmaker, to not introduce, but help him get in a refugee camp the next morning in Greece. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To level set, for years, I have served on the board of the UN High Commission for Refugees. So it wasn't so far out of left field. However, getting someone in a refugee camp is not an easy task, let alone the next day. Mm-hmm. I had 20 minutes before my next meeting, and two things crossed my mind. One, the last thing the world needs is another documentary film about refugee camps that no one will see. Two, I don't have time. It's like I have a call. But then I looked at the clock and I thought, wait, you have 20 minutes. So I jumped in, I made some calls, and I was able to get this fella, a filmmaker, in. I found out 2 weeks later that the fellow was not a documentary filmmaker, but actually a big budget Hollywood filmmaker and producer and director who had done multiple Tom Cruise films. Mm-hmm. And I got to know him. And because of this journey, he became enamored with the refugee cause. And about a month later, a dear friend who was a consultant for the NGO CARE called me and said, Susan, do you know any filmmakers who can go spend time at a refugee camp in Jordan and train and teach youth who had just fled from Syria how to make films to tell their stories? Mm-hmm. I called this fella, Brandt, within 5 minutes. Not only did he say yes, but he got 8 other Hollywood film directors to go with him. They went and spent 2 weeks with these kids, helping them tell their stories. But there's more. He went on to create a narrative film called Refugee that Angelina Jolie happened to see and took it on the world stage, sharing it with global leaders, because she is an ambassador for UNHCR, and helping inform them that this is still very much of a crisis. But there's more. There's a big budget Hollywood film coming out in 2024. It may not have the same title, but it is going to be from this journey that he went on. And it's not a documentary. It's going to be a narrative feature film. So, you know, kind of lesson learned, don't have preconceived notions and be open, because you never know what you don't know.
Yeah, that is so exciting. I mean, I think what I've learned as a journalist is that everybody has a story, and you can't know somebody's story simply by looking at them. And I think a lot of times learning people's story creates empathy. And when you have empathy, that's what drives change. But first you have to be open, right?
Yes.
To hear somebody's stories. And the other thing that kept coming to my mind when you were talking is like the word that I keep hearing around you is community. And you so beautifully illustrate how we are a web of community. And I know that so many of us really felt the impact of a loss of community during COVID. I don't think, at least for myself, I was so mindful or conscious of the impact of the various communities around me in so many forms. And to be cut off from those really did have an impact. But I think your stories and your approach really show that we are all interconnected.
Absolutely. And
cultivating community is key, not only for our own happiness, but also for those around us. So that was a beautiful story. I love that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when people get scared now because we're feeling awkward, which again, myself included, The one thing is we've all experienced the pandemic. Now, granted, some people have suffered far greater consequences. Like I can't even begin to imagine, you know, people who lost loved ones, lost livelihoods. But when we walk into these rooms, at least we all have something we've shared, which, you know, in my lifetime, that hasn't existed before this. So, you know, as horrible as this entire thing has been, I always try to find like one little glimmer of positivity, and that may be one of those glimmers.
Yeah. And we are all social beings, right? We're wired for connection. And I guess it's no surprise, but the research has showed that loneliness has increased, of course, for Americans during the pandemic, especially for two groups, young adults and mothers with children at home. And I wonder if that has to do with the increased demands on mothers and maybe the increased social media use of young adults to connect. And we know that virtual connections don't always release the same like dopamine and other things that maybe in-person connections do. But could you offer some ways we can use technology for good to reverse this growing trend of disconnection?
Yes. Well, first and foremost, instead of trying to like think, how do we go back to where we were? Let's think about how we can use the technology we have, because we are going to be in a hybrid situation for time to come. Yes, thankfully we can, you know, knock on wood, be back in person, but, you know, companies are having hybrid workforces, et cetera. So instead of like trying to figure out how are we going to get back to 9 to 5, 5 days a week, or I don't know, I've never had a 9 to 5 job, I've worked, you know, 8 to 10, don't get me started. But I like to think about the ways the Zooms and the Microsoft Teams and such can actually be more serendipitous. You know, we tend to say, oh, we're losing that water cooler moment and that serendipity of being able to run into someone in the hallway. Okay, I get it. However, think of all the meetings we would be in. We couldn't sit and have a side chat with the person next to us, right? I mean, you could, you might get in trouble. I mean, I used to in school try that and I got a D in conduct in fifth grade. So you can only imagine if I tried to do that at, you know, a boardroom or something. So, but the beautiful thing is we have the chat, okay? And I'm not suggesting be disrespectful to your colleagues in the meeting or the host, but you can have some small side conversations and book a phone call with someone. Take advantage of that. The other thing I like to do is if I'm in a room and I'm with people I don't know, I'll take a photo of everyone with their names. And then when I have time, I'll go back and look them up and see, you know, who are people that, you know, I want to connect with, who are people maybe I can be supporting, who are people we can hire. You know, it's like when you're in a room or a party or a dinner, unless people have name tags, there's no way you know who they are. Right. So this is a way to turn these kind of tools that they can be frustrating because they're not exactly the same, but they do offer benefits. And then with social, you know, Twitter is a nightmare right now. I mean, we know that, but, you know, I still try to show up on these platforms the way I always have, and that is showcasing others. There's nothing better gift than we can give is remind people that we saw them and heard them. And if you do that publicly, And I don't do it with like, oh, now I'm expecting it back. It's more, it's joy. It's dopamine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a way. And just one more, and it's something I started during the pandemic, and that is every morning I would text or WhatsApp or email or call 3 people. And there was no rhyme or reason for who those 3 people were. And my goal was to literally one of 3 things. Say, you know, thinking of you, are you okay? 2, how are you? Which would be the one that would be like looking for a response. Or 3, hey, I'm here. Don't forget about me. Because of course I was alone the entire time. Mm-hmm. So I have stayed to do that. And again, it's just, I'm thinking of you, which quite frankly, in our busy, hectic lives, when you get a note like that, whatever means you do, it feels good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those are my tips.
Those are great. And I mean, you are a master connector and relationship building takes time, obviously, right? There's effort and intentionality that goes into it. Do you have any advice for people on how to focus on making connections and expanding their network without feeling overwhelmed or burned out?
Yeah. I mean, this is where in the first part of my book, there's a section called Gather, where you do a bit of a self audit to determine what your goals are the next year, the next 3 years, 5 years, let's say. And then you really think about, you know, who is it that you want to connect with or reconnect with? You know, let's not forget, we have a lot of dusty contacts that perhaps for whatever reason, we drop the ball or they drop the ball, and it doesn't hurt to reach back out. And yes, some will ghost you and that sucks, but at least you're the person trying, which, you know, hallelujah to that. Mm-hmm. But I think really, you know, sit down and make a list. You know, what is it? You know, who are the people that you have aspirationally you want to meet? And the beautiful thing is unlike, you know, 30 years ago, when I had, you know, the Yellow Pages and the Encyclopedia Britannica to look people up, now you can find out almost anything and everything about people. And then you can find out, you know, the degrees of separation. And just so everyone knows, listening, I know Kevin Bacon. So now everyone is 2 degrees or 1 degree.
Yeah. And I think that's such an important point in the book. It's about authentically finding the way that you connect, right? So, yeah. You know, some people are extroverts and they feel energized by going into a crowd of new people. Other people are introverts. But at the end of the day, we all get energy from making connections, no matter what that method is or strategy is or what that looks like. So I think that's really important. It's finding your own style and your own way of connecting. And then I also wanted to touch upon, there's so much research out there showing that diversity increases innovation, right? Because we have different perspectives and voices. Yet there's also, and I'm guilty of this myself, similarity bias, right? Where we tend to feel more comfortable around people who maybe think like us or act like us. So how can we overcome similarity bias and really diversify our networks in a way that's authentic?
Great question. And actually also covered in the Gather portion of my book where I talk about we need to do everything we can intentionally to break out of our hermetically sealed bubble that we all live in, myself included. And I'll tell you a few kind of the methods that I've used over the years. And of course, nothing is one size fits all. And it is an ongoing thing. It's not something you would do tomorrow and then you're done, right? But I moved around a lot professionally, zigzagged the country throughout my career. And every time I would move to a new location, I would find the time to volunteer, either for a local civic organization, political organization, nonprofit, to meet people who are not like me, but may have similar values. Meaning, you know, here in New York City, when I got involved with the Lower East Side Girls Club, 85% of the girls who belong and visit are of color. And it was a very, very grounding experience for me to learn about their livelihoods, what they've come, you know, how they've grown up in an area that has the most wealthy right against the most underserved in New York City. The same with getting involved in local political organizations. It's just a great way to meet people that are outside your comfort zone. You know, I know people, faith-based institutions, again. So it's a matter of being intentional about joining these. And I know people are like, oh my God, I have no time, but 1 hour a week. Okay. Mm-hmm. Secondly, ask people, you know, who are connected to people. It's okay to admit my network is extremely monolithic. I know, you know, Gene XYZ or Joe XYZ. I'd love an introduction because I'd love to learn how I can be supporting them and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Right. I think sometimes we're afraid to ask that because it sounds, but it's like, nothing's going to happen if we don't actually vocalize it.
And Susan, I think I am going to go here. So there is a lot of political polarization, right? And I think people have a lot of anxiety about political topics being brought up at work. I know around family tables, at least my own family table, politics can be a hot button topic. Do you have any advice on how to connect with people who have you know, diametrically opposing viewpoints?
That is a really hard one. And I have to say, I'm blessed that, you know, I come from a family that, you know, I got my mother got her first job through John F. Kennedy, like, you know, way back, very, very liberal. So, you know, my cousins. But I think it's really leading with the fact that even though we have differences, we still have similarities. I like to do whatever you can to find the commonalities in the uncommonalities. And I have to bring up a woman I've recently gotten to know who I absolutely adore and admire. Her name is Jillian Laub, L-A-U-B. She's a phenomenal photographer and performance artist, et cetera. And she highly recommend her work because she grew up in a very liberal household and then evidently her parents decided to become MAGA Republicans in 2016. And so she tells a lot, and she still very much loves them, and she goes to see them, and she spends time with them. In fact, she just spent Thanksgiving with them. So I encourage you to seek out, and your listeners, seek out her work, because I think it would be informative, since it's an area that, unfortunately, as much as I call myself a connector, I haven't had to deal with. You know, as my late father would say, blood is thicker than water, and it's vitally important to find the values that you do have. And quite frankly, if you don't have any values, then it's probably not a good idea to spend time together.
Right, right. And it's like somehow being able to tap into everyone's common humanity, right? There must be similarities and desires and dreams that people share. I guess in our last few minutes, though, I would like to just ask you if you wrote a whole book on this, but if you could give us the top line overview of your gather, ask, do method for building connection.
Sure. And sorry if a little bit of it is redundant. Overarching theme is leading with how you can be helpful to others. And that flips networking on its head, traditional networking. And the three sections are gather, ask, do. In the gather section, you connect with the most important person in your life, and that is yourself. And you think very deeply about what your superpowers are, because how can you be leading with being helpful to others if you don't know what you are good at, right? And don't overcomplicate it. It can be like you speak a few languages, or you are an amazing cook, or, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, I have a PhD in chemistry, okay? Mm-hmm. Also, you think, as mentioned earlier, about what your goals are for the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 years. And then you think about very intentionally, who is it that you want to meet or reconnect with that are going to help you meet your goals, and then you can be helpful to others. And lastly, what we just addressed, this notion of getting out of our own bubbles, okay? That's gather. Ask is learning to ask the meaningful questions of others that help you get a better understanding of what their goals and hopes and dreams are, okay? If you listen really carefully, which we're all woefully bad at, you get to go to the do phase, which I think, you know, you have witnessed in our the community we belong to, that's my favorite phase. And that's when you take what you listened to, take what you heard, and you follow up, you reciprocate, you are responsive, and you become a trustworthy soul, which is, quite frankly, something we all want to be. So that's the gather, ask, do.
Yeah, it's so helpful for you to break it down like that. Susan, thank you so much for taking the time to share the lost art of connecting with our listeners. Is there anything else that you think is important to ask that I haven't already asked you?
Well, I would like to share with anyone and everyone that if you think that this is just kind of a frivolous activity, I will tell you the science shows that if we make meaningfully connecting a core part of our beings, we'll live longer, the same way as if we were to eat kale every day and run every day. So I tell you, I love kale. I live in Brooklyn after all. However, my running days aren't quite what they used to be. So if I can have a longer lifespan and a healthier lifespan because I'm making meaningful connections, so be it. That's what I'll do.
And Susan, where can people go to find out more about you?
Oh, thank you, Holly. My company is McPherson Strategies. We are a social impact communications firm. So it's mcpstrategies.com. And you can find me on most of the social, you know, things at SusanMcP1.
Amazing. And I will put the link to The Lost Art of Connecting on our show notes. So thank you so much, Susan. It was wonderful talking to you.
Have a wonderful day, Holly.
You too. Take care.
You can learn more about our guests and get show notes at consciouslyunbiased.com/listen. And we want to hear from you. Please subscribe and rate Breaking the Bias on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to our podcasts. And drop us a note to let us know if there is a topic you really want to hear about or a guest you want to have on the show. Thanks for listening to Breaking the Bias.